We continue our scripture reading this morning in the Gospel of Mark. In the 12th chapter, Jesus has been with the disciples for a while now, and they've been learning a lot of lessons from him. And I imagine they're tired, but Jesus has a few more lessons. So let us be attentive to God's living word this morning. As Jesus taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogue and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury, Jesus did, and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, this morning we begin our stewardship season. Our stewardship theme this year that you'll hear for the next few weeks is growing, living, and building together. We'll take a deep dive into what it is we're called to do in those three areas. But that is what stewardship means, right? To manage those things. We've been entrusted to care and nurture for growth and life and building. Many preachers would tell you the text for this morning is actually out of place. It actually belongs at the end of a stewardship campaign, that last go-at-em moment with a widow's mite. So many preachers would say, "I'm a little early for that." Yet I'm learning that I don't do things conventionally nowadays, so why not start with a text that makes us uncomfortable? If you thought this sermon was going to be about a widow and how you are to give like she did, your two copper coins, listen carefully, because it's not. Or if you think this sermon is about how the scribes gave out of abundance and you should too, it's not. This sermon is about something far greater than we can realize. This sermon is about who you pay attention to, or rather, whom do you notice? Each year, Forbes magazine puts out a list of world's most powerful people. If you haven't seen it, you should take a look. Each year, right on the money, right on the nose, they release this list. And the people on the list are said to be people who do things that others cannot do. So the list for 2018, we haven't quite had the list for 2019 yet. Here are your top five world's most powerful people. Number one, the President of the United States. Number two, Vladimir Putin from Russia. Number three, Xi Jinping from China. Number four, German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Number five, Prime Minister Narendra Modi from India. This is quite a list already. More than of the who is on the list, I wondered how they made the list. What is it that Forbes qualifies to get you on this list? I wondered if it just had to do with power or if there was something else underlining it. So Forbes guessed that others of us might have that question too, and so they responded this way. First, they looked at how many people this person has power over. In other words, how many people's lives can this person directly affect? Second, does this person possess or have access to a tremendous amount of financial resources. A seemingly unlimited amount of money goes in hand with the ability to wield power, it seems. And third criteria, is this person powerful in multiple spheres of influence? And fourth, the evaluators of Forbes wanted to make sure that they actually use the power they have, whether we agree with how they use it or not. And after all those four criteria, they concluded, what is the point of power over people if you're not going to use it? So to make this list, you had to use your power. When I thought of the Forbes list, I also thought about our text this morning. There's lots of power happening in it. The scribes seem to have the most power. They surely have been on the Forbes most powerful list for some time now. You see, a scribe is a blend of a lawyer and what we call a theologian. Think of a PhD intellectual elite on both of those matters, and you have your scribe. They're proficient in writing and reading contracts and decrees of the day, and they're most often called upon when someone needs to know whether or not the Torah is being violated or upheld. And because of their immense education and their role in this interpretation, the scribes have lots of power and control over others' lives, especially if you yourself didn't wield an education or power, or maybe you're just a widow. You see, women were not allowed to be in control over their own finances in ancient time, and if a widow had no sons, they relied on the scribes to act as their representative over whatever resources they could and still had. Scribes were also known for exploitation and abuse of those finances that they were in charge of. Not all scribes, but a huge portion of them. Many found ways to turn their education and their role for money and overseeing into an empire for themselves. And do you remember the Forbes criteria just now? It seems they would be close to the top. They had power and control over many people, especially those on the margins, and they can amass a great amount of financial resources that most people could only dream of obtaining. And of course, their influences in the synagogue and in the marketplace was uncharacteristic. Scribes wanted to be seen and counted on in the marketplace in their transactions. They wanted you to come to them. And they wanted you to come to them in the temple and interpret the law correctly. Jesus says they even demanded that you do so. Scribes want to be seen and heard, so that the power that they're accumulating would get exactly what they wanted, more power and more money, which led to more power and more money. The scribes might have been the number one on the Forbes list in ancient times, if you are going back there. Maybe even in our times, they would have been in maybe the top five or the top 10. They would have relished in seeing their name on such a list. There were enough scribes during acting this way in Jesus' time that he shows up in the temple. Someone should have alerted him that they were on his way. Not that it would have made a difference to the scribes. They did what they had grown accustomed to doing, which is showing their piety and wielding their power. And of course, Jesus, did you hear it? He doesn't like what he sees. A colleague says, from Jesus' perspective, those scribes were so busy grabbing for power, so busy pretending and praying out loud, so busy acting so much holier than thou, they had completely forgotten what they had been charged to do. You see, the power of the scribes were so busy storing it up, just storing it up atop the world's most powerful people, rather than what they had been charged by Jesus, and trust that people follow the law and that people have someone to advocate for them. They forgot what they were meant to do. So the scribes, if you were on the margins, did not pay attention to you. You were not going to bump their ranking up on the Forbes list. And so they only paid attention to those who could wield them more money or more power. But you see, the story right after that, Jesus sits in the treasury and has a different perspective. He notices the broken, a leper, the weak, the lost, the least, the lonely, those who could not enrich the scribes' power. They were the ones Jesus dared for them to interact with. These were the ones which power should have been used for and with, not against. But they were too busy to pay attention or notice. And so the scribes get scolded by Jesus because they're not paying attention. And Jesus says, but I'm asking you to notice. But they're too self-indulgent. And Jesus looks for the scribes who would dare not see and wonders who is most powerful. What if they didn't have power? And what if they didn't have money? And the widow simply walks into the temple, unnoticed by the scribes, and if I had to guess, by many others in the temple. She had nothing to offer them to bump their ranking on the list. She comes vulnerable because no husband meant no protection, and no scribe was going to give that to her either. The ones whose voice never rises above the others, because to acknowledge her voice means your power might go down a few rungs. And so she comes with what she has, two simple coins. She walks up and offers them to the treasury with a power that the scribes and we may never truly understand. You see, the scribes and the religious leaders, indeed the whole congregation, have been charged to defend the poor, the widows and the children, those who are socially estranged, and all those broken in body or spirit, you know, those that never would appear on Forbes' list. None of those who would ever see or darken that list. They were put in charge of them, but they were nowhere to be found. Serving those vulnerable children of God was their primary call. And yet not one of them, at least that we know of, or anyone else, sees her walk in but Jesus. No one seems to notice a thing about her presence. And this was the case 2 weeks ago here at Covenant Presbyterian Church. It was a Thursday evening. The day was busy for me, meetings after meetings, and then a session meeting on top of that meeting in the evening. I had been meetinged out already. I had just left a coffee meeting with Denise, the first United Methodist pastor who's new in town, and I left her to go eat a quick meal with Austin before the session meeting. I told him I'm in a hurry, and I have to make it to the session meeting, and I need to print a few papers because Yana, bless her heart, had only been on the job a week and a half, and we still needed papers. So we ate in the square of Sherman. On my way back to the church, I was driving down Houston Street, and I take the little cutoff between the houses and that parking lot that gets you into our church parking lot, and I noticed a woman walking. She had a white t-shirt on and pink colored pants, and she was carrying a clear bag with a few clothes in it and just kind of meandering through. Many people walk through our parking lot. It is a direct path for many, many people. And so I didn't think much about it. Cars were still being pulled in from session members, and they're headed to the cube to put up tables and prepare for our meeting. I thought she might have left an adjacent car in the parking lot. There was one there. I didn't see her get out of it, but I didn't know. But as I approached the main building to print my papers and get on with our meetings, I didn't think much of her. I thought she's just transversing like most others. And so I come in, unlock the door, and as many of you know, it chimes when you come in. So I head to the office, and I'm printing my papers frantically. The meeting is approaching, and I can't find everything I need, and I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't have ate anyways. And I hear the ding, and I thought, Nikki told me she was going to be late, but maybe she got off work early. See, Nikki and I work in the same way. She comes and prints papers before the session meeting, too. After that, I put it out of my mind. I thought, I got to get these papers, and I got to get to the community building. My custom here at Covenant is to do two things since I've been your pastor. One is to always look down the long hallway when I leave the office. I can't tell you why I do it, but I do it. And the second is to always glance in the sanctuary, whether I'm coming or whether I'm going. And I can't tell you why I do that either. Once I saw a candle who had still been lit, and so that was good for us. We did not burn down, and I extinguished the candle. But that was 2 years ago, and I haven't seen anything out of the ordinary since. But I always glance. So this day, I'm running around. I have in the back of my mind that this door has chimed, but I haven't seen Nikki, and I'm so frantic. I've grabbed my bag, and I'm walking out the foyer, and what do? I glance into the sanctuary, and I see her. And she has come into the sanctuary. She was the chime. And she was over here in this window, standing just like this, looking up. And in that day, and I promise you it'll never happen again, the light was so bright on her, but no other window showed that kind of light. And she stood there looking up. I stood at the back thinking, oh gosh, you know, she wants to pray, I'll pray, but I gotta really go to this meeting and these papers and it's stewardship and, okay. So, but I stand there for a few more minutes and I'm wondering what's happening because I see her and it's as if this conversation is taking place that I'm not privy to. And so then I wonder, well, should I even interrupt that conversation? But I do, aware of the time, aware of my meetings, aware of my schedule. And so I said, I hate to bother you, but I need to lock up the building. Is there something I can help you with? She kind of ignores me and continues to stand there looking up. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have to go and meet her and we're going to have a long conversation, and we're going to have to walk out together. Okay, I can do this, Lord. But then she turns around, and I can see she's been crying. And I thought, I now don't want to know what she's talking about because I'm afraid that it might change me. So she walks down the aisle. And she comes to me and meets me, and I meet her about halfway down here. And she hands me the piece of paper she's been holding with a conversation. And I thought, prayer list. I always get one of those, or a request for assistance or something like that. I thought that's what it would be. But instead, she thrust it into my hands, and she says, I want you to use this to bless this church. I want you to use this to bless this church. I look down, I glance, I see that it's a check. I don't notice any other information on it, and she can tell I'm bamfuzzled. And so she squares with me again, and she says, I want you to use this to bless this church. I'm awestruck. I have no words for her. I don't know her. I don't know her name. I don't know how she's connected to us. And so she leaves the building immediately. I hear the chime. I'm still standing in the narthex, dumbfounded. And I look down, and I look at the check. This is the check. It's for $1. $1 made out to her from the Grayson County Jail. I imagine the tears that day were, "This is all I have left." And why she chose Covenant, I don't know. I have no idea. Because she most likely knew we could not cash this check. It's in her name. But I think she was asking us to cash it in a different way. Use this to bless this church. What will we do with this dollar? We've been mandated to do a blessing. What is it that God would have us see? I was so dumbfounded, I made my way haphazardly to the cube, and the session members could see I was visibly disturbed in many ways. And so they asked me what's wrong, and I said, I hate it when Jesus shows up unannounced in church. And they said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I just hate it when Jesus shows up unannounced in church. I'll have to tell you about it later. So I went back out to her because she had made our way to the picnic tables and was continuing to cry. Just because we locked the building didn't mean she left us. And so she sat there and I said, is there something I can give you? And she said, water. Simple water. That's all I want. I said, well, we have tons of food. I'm happy to give you food. And she says, I simply want water and for you to bless this church. And I said, I'll be right back. So in the main building, I come back, I get her water, I get her food, and I give it to her, tears still streaming down her face. And I said, what else can I do for you? And she said, do what I ask of you. And then I went to my session meeting. That's the last we saw of her. We only know her name by this check, but I guarantee you that's probably not her real name. And so, what do we do with this? What do we do with this check for $1, but ask us to do something more than cash it in the bank? Something vastly more than I was willing and prepared to experience that day. So how will we use her dollar? Have you ever thought about that? How the treasury would have used the widow's two mites? Or would they have simply discarded it as not enough to do what they wish? And so I often think that the widow and our friend is on Jesus's Forbes list, and they are right at the top. And so, this stewardship season into 2020, how will we use this? How will we use her blessing to us, and whom are we asked to pay attention to and notice? I don't know, but I tell you what, I'll never pass by the sanctuary without looking in again, because Jesus might just be standing here. And he did come announced. The door did chime. May it always be so. Amen.